Hey, good evening. This is Bringing the Darkness to the Light with my guest tonight, Kieran Sheehan. He's an amazing friend of mine. He has been the Phantom of the Opera on Broadway for many years. He's also a singer and an actor and just completely talented. So it's a pleasure to have you on, Kieran.
Well, thanks, Kathy. Glad to be here. How are you?
Oh, good. Yeah. No, it is just, it's really incredible. I mean, you and I, you know, recently I was talking with some people. You and I have been friends, I don't know, it might be like 15 years now, or maybe longer. I don't know.
I can tell you exactly when.
Oh, really?
Yes. Jill, it was the first week of July of 2009.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yep.
Oh, that's right. And we actually, just so the audience knows, you and I actually met at a James Bond Prague event.
Yeah.
And it was for spirituality, and it was a week long. And we met two other people there that we're still friends with, Siri Bernstein and Marilyn Mall.
Yeah.
And we still met James.
Shaker Iyer. Do you remember Shaker?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, there was a lot of people on that week with us. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. That was such a beautiful week, too.
Oh, it was great. Really, just, I mean, yeah. I didn't know what I was walking into, to be honest, you know. A friend of mine had talked to me.
Well, I don't think any of us really knew what we were walking into. James kind of kept it very open-ended, you know. It was experienced people, non-experienced people, but the way James von Prague kind of based, I think most of his talks and teachings is really all about healing. And that was really the draw. That's even the draw with our friendship. You know, just a couple of years ago, they wrote an article about you and I in the Village Voice. And it goes back to something that you graciously did for my family. My godfather was ailing, and he was very, very critically ill in an ICU.
Yeah.
And you said, is there anything I could do? And I said, I don't know, maybe you could sing for him. And you went there. And, I mean, you could tell the story, but, I mean, the Village Voice wrote this beautiful article about music and healing.
Yeah, I know. Henry and Sally, who is still with us, are, you know, just lovely people, really lovely people. And I think I sang Impossible Dream from Man of La Mancha. I think it was one of his favorite songs.
Yes.
And, you know, whatever joy it brought him, I was, you know, glad to be there for them.
Well, it was incredible, though, because they all said that, you know, the entire ICU went silent other than the monitors beeping, you know?
With my big voice.
So yeah, but it's not just providing healing to him, but I mean to the staff, you know. It's just, you know, I often think about the human body, you know. We walk around with energy, and sometimes we feel like our energy is really high. Sometimes we feel like our energy is really low. But I think we have, like, these invisible beams that come out of us. And even when our energy is low, we're still radiating those energy beams out to other people. And
I just find
it incredible.
Yeah, recently, Kathy, actually, they have there've been some scientific studies on that there is a constant low level of light that's emitted from the human body. And when someone passes them, when they leave their body, that completely stops. Even if the body is sort of still alive to a degree, once the soul transitions out, that light stops. So I found really fascinating.
Oh, wow, yeah. That to me is really, it's really key, you know, especially when you talk about grief. You know, you know, a lot of families go through, like, kind of a very slow transition because their family member doesn't leave suddenly. Sometimes family members have to sit at the bedside, you know, and go through, you know, the struggle with them. And that's part of grief. You know, a lot of times people automatically think grief happens when the person has now died. But grief actually starts early on. Sometimes when you first get a diagnosis, you know, you start starting to grieve the inevitable.
Yeah,
it's just incredible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, yeah, I want to remind people that they can call in and speak to you. The call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. And the other call-in number is 323-744-4831. So I just wanted to say that you and I have had this great friendship, but also that I've been able to be in your presence for so many performances. And I have to tell you, though, and I was going back in my mind, and I was like, I have to remind to tell him this, but I was in the 1995 to 1998, I dated a guy from Yonkers, an Italian guy named Ernie Barone, and we were really into Broadway, and we were always running off to see a show. And we saw Phantom, and it was during one of those 3 years. So were you the Phantom of the Opera between 95 and 98?
Let's see, 95 through, let's see, I was in the Broadway company 93 to 90, the beginning of 95. And then I actually went up to Toronto and played the Phantom up there for a little over 2 years. And then I came back to the Broadway company and I played Raoul again, which was the first role I had done in the show. I did that in the fall of 98 into the spring of 99. Yeah, so I had a fair shake. So from
maybe
92
I did
to 99,
see you.
God help you, Kathy.
I think I did, you know. And it was during that period in the 90s, I have to say, 95 to 2000, that Broadway really created a lot of fundraising during the Broadway play. And most of the plays that I attended, they were going around and fundraising for AIDS and HIV testing at the time and all that. And they would literally pass the bucket around.
And that
was very big in New York City. And I remember that distinctly at the Phantom of the Opera performance that they were doing that fundraising.
Yeah, absolutely. It was called Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. And Kathy, I will tell you that my signature went from understandable to a doctor's prescription signature. every night you were signing literally hundreds of posters. And, you know, by the time you hit 100, it just becomes lazy. And so now my signature is illegible.
Well, yeah, you know, no, that I understand,
My eldest son, Kyle, who's expecting a baby next month, when he was in high school, he learned how to copy that illegible signature.
Very clever. I can imagine what he did with that signature. Wow, you know, but I just can't believe it either, because your kids have gotten so big over the years, you know. And one of them actually has been on Broadway himself also.
Yeah, Brendan, my youngest, is in Gypsy at the moment at the Majestic, which is the theater that I was in Phantom, was in the Majestic, you know, in the Majestic from January 88 until April of 23. And then they closed and did a lot of restoration to the theater. And the first show to reopen the Majestic is Gypsy, which opened in December. And my youngest is in it, dancing away, singing away, acting away.
Wow, yeah, that is just incredible. I know, and to think, you know, I often think this, you know, when someone has something in the family that is a duplicate, you know, some of my friends are firemen, and then their son goes into, you know, be a fireman too. And people think that it's easy. And through my conversations with some of the guys, it's actually tougher. You know, some of the young guys are like, you know, they have to live up to their father's expectations, you know. So how is your son with, like, you know, hitting Broadway and saying, oh, my God, I have to, you know, match dad's, you know. What do you think?
Well, honestly, what I think is when I first went into Phantom, and I was playing Raoul, they actually changed the choreography in the show because I was so awful.
Oh, my gosh.
And literally, like, 5 days into rehearsal, they said, yeah, we need to restage some of this. And now Brendan, on the other hand, is, he's a fabulous dancer. And he's got a terrific voice and a good actor. So, it's me trying to keep up with him. Forget it. You know, he's really a terrific dancer. He went to Boston Conservatory, and he was the president of the Tap Club. He's a terrific tapper. Really, really loves it. And his sister's a fabulous dancer as well. She did.
Yes. Wasn't she involved in Cats? Yeah.
Yes, she toured with Cats for a couple of years. And so they can both. They definitely can do something I certainly can't, which is dance.
Yeah. Wow, that is amazing. So if I can just ask you a couple of questions about Phantom, because
sure.
I know a lot of the audience is also a fan of Phantom, and I've never mm-hmm. in all these conversations we're always talking about, you know, like regular life, so I never get to ask you these Phantom questions. But in all of your work, do you have any memories of like a particular time you may have been in the company of Andrew Lloyd Webber? Do you have any kind of inside story to that? I always thought that would be fascinating.
I've met Andrew a few times in passing, mostly sort of at these huge gala events or anniversary events where, you know, it's overcrowded and you can't really talk to anyone because it's too loud. I really haven't spent much time at all one-on-one with him. Obviously a great admirer of his work. In fact, the show that I tour with now called The Four Phantoms in Concert, it's John Cudahy and Frank D'Ambrosio and Brent Barrett and myself, and along with Kaylee Voorhees, who played Christine in Phantom on Broadway. We were just talking recently about those sort of events, and, you know, you can't get to say hello to anyone because it's mad. It's kind of like being at a wedding, you know, and all these people come together and you spend 10 seconds with each person, you know. But in the show, The Four Phantoms, I sing Gethsemane from Jesus Christ Superstar. And what a lot of people don't realize is that Andrew wrote that when he was 16 years old, which is just an astonishing thing to me.
That is really incredible. I know. And I was looking into the, I guess there's like the story behind the Phantom, and the story of the Phantom doesn't always match what was portrayed on Broadway. And I had read somewhere that the actual character of the Phantom, his real name was Eric, but they never used that in a Broadway play. Had you heard that?
Oh, yeah. In fact, Eric with a K, E-R-I-K. I sort of came to the role from an acting perspective first, and how I was doing a show off Broadway with Hal Prince, who directed Phantom, and he said to me, do you sing? You know, and I said, yeah, if you want to hear some Led Zeppelin, because the only singing I had done was in college, singing with a hard rock metal band. And which is a lot of fun. I still love to do that. But he sent me to his daughter Daisy's voice teacher. And next thing I know, I'm on Broadway in Les Mis and then Phantom. You know, I was very lucky, very blessed. In fact, he and Charlotte Moore, who runs the Irish Rep Theater in New York City with Kieran O'Reilly, Charlotte and Hal paid for my voice lessons when I was starting out. You know, at the time, I was working as a security guard trying to make it as an actor, and they were very kind to me. So.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah, you know, when you say, oh, yeah, I could sing, well, first of all, I've heard you sing Led Zeppelin, and it's killer. And you actually did a lot of Zeppelin at your own wedding, so that was kind of cool. You did, I know, and your wife was so incredibly talented that she was able to play the flute during Stairway to Heaven, which to me, I was just astonished at that. So that was just really amazing.
It's funny, Yeah, I strong-armed her into doing that because she'd played the flute pretty proficiently in school up to through high school. And then she just sort of, you know, she left it there. And I had her flute that she still held on to. I had it rebuilt and got her some flute lessons and talked her into playing at the wedding. But the funniest thing at the wedding, I think, the wedding reception at least, was John Cudia, one of the other Phantoms, the Four Phantoms. Fascinatingly enough, we have such a parallel history. You know, we both played in rock bands in high school and, you know, into college. We both were engineering majors initially in college. And then I dropped out and joined a metal band. He flipped over to theater. But I found out that John played drums. So I said, do you want to play or will you play at the wedding? And so we did. He played a Black Sabbath song. And his wife, Kathy, who played Christine in Phantom, she had never heard him play drums. So the best moment was doing a Black Sabbath song and seeing Kathy's jaw on the floor as she's watching John back there behind the kit, you know, play out of, you know, it was great fun, great fun.
But your wedding was beautiful, though. I mean, just the scene, you know, it's kind of like this country New Jersey scene. But it was like a barn. Like we were like in this fancy barn atmosphere. It was just like it was like a Hallmark movie. Honestly, I felt like we were walking through a Hallmark movie. I was like, this is incredible. But yes, she must really love you to play the flute because I would have been a nervous wreck doing that.
Well, I think one of her girlfriends had a drink waiting for her as she would exit.
I'm sure I would have had to have a gallon. That's too funny, yeah. Well, you're a really great performer, though, because I've actually twisted your arm to do a couple of things for me with veterans and, you know, just stand-up events, and you've always been there for me, you know, at the drop of the hat. So I really appreciate that. Couple of other questions going back to the Phantom. I was thinking of this because I never saw you in Les Mis. I actually never saw Les Mis. I can't believe I missed that one because my family has always been so Broadway.
Yeah.
And I thought of Les Mis because I know the storyline. And then I thought of Phantom. And I thought of, you know, as we progress through the years, a lot of, you know, and you hear about it now. There's a commercial that's running about Stranger Things just hit Broadway. And they're talking about, like, the incredible stage performance, but also what goes on in the stage. So, you know, technological things that are happening on the stage, you know?
Or lights,
everything's happening, right? So there's almost too much stimulation. But when you go back to those two big shows that you were involved in, Les Mis, and also... Yeah. Phantom of the Opera. I'm sure they were using, even in the 90s, remote control, right? I mean, some things would be moved in and out on remote control, right?
Yeah, absolutely,
Do you remember kind of snafus or any kind of, like, you know, we can't get the boat back or we can't get the helicopter to fly or...
I cannot tell you, Kathy, how many times I ended up both as Raoul and as the Phantom, pulling that bloody boat across the stage.
Oh, wow.
Because I do remember in New York, the prop master, his name was Victor, lovely fella, he would control the boat with a remote control, you know, and once in a while it just would not behave or it would stop. And you had to get out and... actually had to lift it up off of the wheels that were part of the motor onto a third wheel and then drag the thing down the stage with Christine in it. You know, suddenly the Phantom could walk on bloody water, you know.
That's incredible.
I had dinner on Sunday night up in Connecticut with a friend of mine, Rick Hilsebeck, and his wife, Sarah Fisterer, and they both played the Phantom and Christine, and we were falling out of our chairs laughing at some of the funny stories that things that would happen. One of my the one that my wife and I are still laughing about was it was when Rick was playing the Phantom. I didn't see it, but he told me the story of what happened. Because at the top of the second act in Phantom of the Opera, it's the masquerade ball. And the Phantom appears at the top of the stairs in the Red Death costume. And the music is, you know, sort of sinister in a way. You know, it's very dun, dun, dun. And then the Phantom, you know, you step down the grand staircase, which is supposed to be in the Paris Opera House, with on each beat. And on one of the beats where the Phantom stopped still, he said he heard a child in the audience go, uh-oh. He said he couldn't function. He was laughing inside the mask, the Red Death mask, so hard. But things like that are really wonderful about
Yeah,
live
it's incredible.
Theater.
Wow, that's incredible.
Very funny. Very funny.
So
moment.
When you talk about the Phantom and you talk about the actual mask, I'm sure hair, makeup, putting the costume on, the mask actually had to be form-fitted for your face, right? Since there was probably had an understudy or whatever, but it wasn't like one size fits all, right? So do you remember the process of having...
Yeah. So when you start playing the role of Phantom, what they do is they take a full cast of your head. They put some kind of a wig cap, a ball cap on your head, so all this clay is not stuck in your hair. And then they take a whole impression of your entire head, and then that they make a mold out of that. And the gentleman actually who created the makeup for the Phantom was a guy named Christopher, I believe, in England. And so he supplied all of the Phantom companies with all of the masks. So what he would do is he would then build a bust of a replica of your head, and then he would design he would create the pieces. There were three major pieces that would get glued onto your face, and so he would make them to fit your skull, and then create a mask to fit. Well, then on top of that, there would be one wig, the alopecia wig, and then another wig on top of that. They just called it the handsome wig, and then he would create the mask on top of that.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, so they would put
we
that
have
on the
Sophie online too, Kieran. We should take Sophie online.
I think
online
I might
too.
Know who Sophie is.
Really? Oh, wow, let her on.
Sophie?
Hi!
Uh-huh. Well, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm very good, Sophie. You're very good to call in. Do you have a question at all?
So I know that you and I have been friends and.
Yeah.
And I know that that you and I have been, you know, singing together, you know, on stage, and I, you know, I love doing that with you, and you know, I wanted to ask you, like, you know, I mean. I mean, like, for you, singing on stage for you, I mean, what does that feel like for you? I mean, what is, like, singing on stage for you feel like for you? I mean, like, for me, I feel so, like, you know, I feel so alive with myself, like, How does that make you feel?
Well, I would say it's probably very similar, Sophie. And I will say it's always been a pleasure any time that I've had the chance to sing with you. And I really appreciate how supportive you've been coming to my concerts, coming to Four Phantoms concerts, and that. So really appreciate it. But for me, it depends on the song, actually, because I approach most of it from an actor's point of view. So in the song, it depends on what the song is. So when I'm singing Music of the Night, I'm in that.
Oh my God, I love when you sing that. Like, I just bawl.
Yeah. So and Kathy, you'll find this interesting. When I first was doing Phantom of the Opera, I was playing Raoul, and there was a woman in the show with a wonderful, just a fabulous voice, who covered a number of roles in the show and eventually ended up playing Carlotta for a while. Is Sophie's voice teacher, and her name is Julie Schmidt, right, Sophie?
Oh, yeah, wow. Julie, yeah. Actually seeing her on Thursday.
Will you tell her I said hi, please?
Yeah, tell her that you said hi.
Absolutely. Sophie, I just want to say thanks for calling in. You're very kind.
No problem.
And please tell your family I said hello, will you?
Yeah, I will. And it's so nice hearing your voice. I really, really miss you. And I would love to see you again. I really want to.
Okay. Well, you know what? I will let you know when I'm doing a concert in the area, and hopefully you can come, and that I'd appreciate that a lot.
Yeah, please let me know.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, thanks so much for calling
please.
In, Sophie. And you have a lovely night,
problem,
okay?
No problem, Kieran. Yeah,
right,
love you.
Love you, too. You take care.
You do.
Okay, bye-bye.
Wow, you know, you have a big fan base. Karen, you don't need me to tell you that.
She's a lovely kid, really nice kid.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, well, you were just talking about going through all of the steps of getting this mask put in, but it's not just the mask. I mean, you were talking about the wig preparation and the whole.
Yeah.
I mean, that's incredible. A lot of times people don't realize that. You know, they sit in their seats, the curtain goes up, characters come out, and you're like, okay, this is it. So how many times in all of your Phantom that, you know, because you toured, you were not just in New York, but you were, you know, in Canada and whatever. Did you see variations of that, you know, that it was more that's something we just do in New York City, or was it like a static, this is the way the Phantom's done everywhere? How would you say that?
I would say that each makeup artist, like for a long time, there was a woman in New York who did the makeup named Thelma Pollard. And then in Toronto, the woman who did the makeup, I think the entire run, is named Leslie Olson. And it's kind of nice because you develop a real personal relationship with these people, because the Phantom is sort of an isolated track. Because you're only on stage for a few minutes with Christine, and then at the end, you know, here and there through the show, and then at the end you're on stage with the character who's playing Raoul and Christine. And so a lot of time is spent with the makeup artist and with the stage managers. And but the makeup is supposed to be the same everywhere you go. You know, but each makeup artist is an artist, and they will try and, you know, make it their own in a way. I have a funny story for you about the makeup, because when I was playing the Phantom in New York in November of 94, and the producer from Canada, Garth Drabinsky, this was a different production company, Hal said, because Colin Wilkinson, the original Jean Valjean, had been playing the Phantom in Toronto for a number of years, and he was leaving, and Garth was looking for different people, take over the role, and Hal called him and said, "Listen, before you hire anyone, you know, come down come down and see Kieran in New York. And so Garth came down, and it's funny, after the show, I went up to the dressing room on the second floor, and Thelma had the phone in her hand, and she's like, "It's Garth Jabinski!" And so I took the phone, and I said, "Hi, Garth, how are you?" You know, because I'd met him through the first show that I did with Hal Prince, where I met Hal. It's an off-Broadway show with the Irish Rep. And so I said, "How are you?" He said, "I'm crying." And I said, "You all right?" He said, "You've got me crying. You got to come to Toronto and do the show." And so I said, let me talk to this company and see if they'll let me out of my contract to come up and do it. And they were kind enough to let me out to go up there to do it, because Garth was very generous with his actors.
That's sweet.
But I had to go up there for a photo shoot so that they could prepare the program. So I went up there a few weeks before I was going to start up there. And when I arrived up there, the makeup pieces that had been sent to Leslie had been made for Robert Guillaume. Do you remember Robert Guillaume?
Oh, wow. Benson, okay.
On television? Because Guillaume took over for Michael Crawford in L.A. So the pieces that they sent for me were black.
Didn't fit you.
No. I don't know if they fit me, but they were black. So, you know.
That's so funny. Oh, my God.
So she was like, "Well, I guess you're going to have to wear columns pieces."
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, very
wow,
funny.
I love these stories. You know, we have another call on the line. It's Bridget calling from New York.
Okay.
Hi, Bridget.
Hi.
How are you?
Hi, good, thanks. I'm enjoying the show. Catherine told me about it, so I wanted to join in and say hello.
Well,
hello from New York.
Oh,
lovely
great.
Weather here today. Top of the morning.
So do you have a question for Kieran?
No, just listening in. Just listening. I'll let you know towards the end if I have a question. You guys are covering all bases.
Yeah, so I think Kieran, I think Bridget has a connection with you because she's got an Irish connection with you. So you probably have a connection to whatever town you're from in Ireland.
Where's your family from, Bridget?
Yeah, Kieran, you met me at the VA. Yeah, I told you my parents are from Kerry, Kinmare. My mother's from Castle Island, but my grandmother, my grandmother's from Bantry, Cork. So my relatives are Cork and Kerry.
And Kerry. My father's family is Kerry, North Kerry. Yeah.
So I've been to
your people are from a nicer area of Kerry.
Yeah, I think I remember you telling me you knew this family that I knew from Inwood. I never knew that you knew these people from Inwood. Andy Horan, the fireman.
You know what? Funny you bring Andy up, because when I was for part of my childhood I lived in Inwood, and that's actually where I started singing with that Good Shepherd Church on the Upper West Side. And Andy was in the choir. And and his mom just passed recently, so I reached out to him, and I reached out to Andy, and I said, "Listen, you know, because Andy and I have met up a few times over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
He came to see me in a play, and he has a house down in LBI in New Jersey, the shore, and so we've met up down there." And so I called him and I said, "Listen, would you like me to sing your mom's funeral?" So which was in Pearl River. And, it was lovely to see him, his family. So.
Oh, that was beautiful that you did. I knew his mom very well. She was lovely.
Yeah.
And the father was
Joan,
Andy as well. He knew my father. Yeah, Joan. Yeah, I knew Joan.
Yeah.
She used to work in the Irish shop. There was a little Irish gift store not far from Good Shepherd. She used to work there.
Yeah, on Broadway, not too far from
that's correct.
King Street. Yeah.
Yeah, she was a lovely lady. She knew me. I used to date his brother Mike, so that's how we know each other. But I met all the brothers.
Did you go to Good Shepherd?
We used to work together. I didn't go to Good Shepherd, but I hung out with a lot of people from Good Shepherd. I used to work in a supermarket called Finest at the day. We said you had to be the finest to work there. And that's
right
how
next
we met
to the
Mike.
Riverdale skating rink.
That's correct.
Right.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. So Alassane Inwood would work there, and I mean, some from St. John's visitation, but we all got along so great, and we always just had a great time. It was just, you know, if I could have a time machine to take me back in life, it would be there and the terminal bar, and I'd be all set. It'd be all fine. It was just great. I had the best times, you know. It was just great. I'd go up and down the aisles, talk, and mix and mingle with all my different friends. And we had a great, we just had a great time. But we would go down Inwood sometimes for parties and hang out. But they were a nice group. They were a nice group, and you know, always very motivated. Many of them that came from Inwood went on to become a lot of professional doctors and lawyers and cops and nurses and very, you know, they were determined and very nice people. Yep. And, you know, then I knew them from that. And then somewhere along the lines, the funny thing is his father, Mike Horan's father, he came, he would always come over to my house to visit because he was friends with a friend of our family. And I would open the door and say, oh, hi, Andy. I just knew him as Andy, a family friend. And next time, he's sitting in the kitchen having Irish tea and sausages with my mother, and my father's there. And next thing, the phone rings, and it was Finest. And Finest was asking me, would I like to come in early to work? So I go, no. He says, you work in Finest? And I went, yeah. It was kind of like, you know, I'm thinking Andy. I thought Andy was like a bachelor. I knew nothing about him. And he says, oh, you probably know my son. I went, your son? And he goes, Mike Horan, that's my son. I went, what? So when I went to work, I said, hey, Mike, I was having breakfast with your father this morning. He almost jumped out of his skin. He's like, what? What did he do? Did he say something stupid? It was just funny. It was funny. Yeah, so when you said Inwood to me, I was like, where did that connect? So, yeah.
Well, you know what?
But, man,
you know what's funny?
I have to tell my mother this when I go back. She'll be sad. She knew it very well.
Yeah.
How long ago did this happen?
Just, gosh, two, 3 months ago. It's recent.
Okay.
Yeah,
gosh,
I have no bloody sense of time. But you know who else came from
Inwood?
That was
nice of you.
Thanks.
Who?
Do you remember where PS98 was on 212th Street?
Yes.
Yes, between 10th Avenue and Broadway. So when I left the show in Toronto, they were looking for someone to take over for me. And they brought a fella in. He was there for a couple of months, but they weren't. I don't think they were quite happy with him, but so his name will remain nameless. But then they brought in Paul Stanley from Kiss.
Really?
Oh, wow, really?
Paul Stanley.
Wow, now this show is getting interesting.
Paul Stanley was from 212th Street and went to PS 98.
Yeah, that's right. I remember someone saying that. Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
So, yeah. So there was a Zoom meeting with a lot of the Toronto cast, and Paul and I were on it. And all we did, we took up the whole bloody time talking about Inwood.
That's so funny, like we're doing now. And my father used to work in the bus terminal right there, 215th Street?
215th Street,
Yeah, that were my father. That's my father, him and all the Irish. They were, my father was a bus driver from me.
That whole area was... Irish.
And Woodlawn. You know, he'd be there in Woodlawn.
Yeah. There was a documentary made, I think, in the early 60s by an Irish priest. It was made for the Irish radio television station, RTE. And when he, you can see it on YouTube, but he introduces it Inwood as an Irish slum. And so myself and all our friends who grew up in Inwood,
probably
said,
mad.
Wow, we didn't know we grew up in an Irish slum.
Yeah, but look what they used to say about the Bronx. They used to go off on the Bronx with all the fires. There was some guy who wrote a book.
Oh, gosh,
that's but that's how they make their, you know, their books and their movies. They called it the Burning Bronx, and he called, they go off on that too. So I get it. That is so funny. Yeah, what a small world. Now, have you been, sorry, someone's mowing a lawn here. Have you been to Ireland recently?
I was home last year for a couple of weeks. And, and then, funny enough, I was in the west of Ireland is this fabulous place called Ashford Castle. And So we were there for a few days. I was doing a concert, and I got friendly with the management staff there. And yeah. My stepdaughter is studying hotel management down in James Madison University in Virginia. And so I said Lisa, the castle manager, I said, Lisa, any chance of putting this one to work next summer? So she went over there last week, and she'll be there until the middle of August. And she's having a great time.
And they do fantastic with tourism. They do great with the tourism in Ireland. And they get all these grants to update everything, and it's beautiful. So there's a friend of the family who's in from Cork. He was over to visit my mother today. His name is Pat Horgan. So he's
going
to come out to dinner with us on Sunday. Oh, no, I can. Yeah, I can. I can understand.
Because people in Ireland can often not understand people from Cork.
he likes to laugh a lot, so you have to catch it while he's in between laughing. And he smokes a lot, too. But I can, it's funny, I have a hard time with Scottish, but I can understand Irish.
Well, it's in your blood.
Some people tell me I have a brogue. I'm like, me. But, so we're going to get together on Sunday, and then we like to kind of catch up, like, hey, what's going on in Ireland? What's new? What's happening? So it'll be a showdown. We'll have a great time on Sunday. We're going to go to Beccafino's, four of us.
Nice.
We'll catch up with Pat and what's going on in Cork and Kerry and what's going on in Ireland. He likes to talk about everything, so it's fun. Talking to you is like local and international, Kieran, is great. This is great. You're on this radio show. Catherine told me about it, and it's great. I think
Catherine's a good friend.
No, absolutely.
So, Bridget, do you have any questions about Broadway? Because Kieran is known for Phantom of the Opera and Les Mis. So do you have any Broadway questions for Kieran?
What's your favorite show, Kieran?
That's a funny question. You know, because my son is on Broadway at the moment in Gypsy, so I suppose I should say that. But yeah. At the Majestic, where I did Phantom, which is kind of fun,
cool.
But if you ask me, it depends on, if you ask me what my favorite musical is that I've ever seen, I'd probably, Les Mis is a big one for me.
I agree, me too.
First time, I was very moved by it. If you ask me the straight play, I would probably say The Cripple of Inishman, which was on Broadway a number of years ago with the actor who plays Harry Potter, Daniel, what's his name? I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but he was absolutely fabulous. But in terms of, I often say to people, I'd rather watch Les Mis, but I'd rather play the Phantom because the character is so fascinating.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Phantom's my favorite.
Oh, wow.
And I did see Les Mis three times. And I think I told you the joke is my middle name is Christina. So, that is part of
Christina. So there you go.
Yes, there you go. Exactly. But I did see, I think I saw it about five times. And it doesn't matter where you sit. It's all great. The music's fantastic. Yeah. But let's say you got a call from some producer and it was just a fantastic opportunity. What would you hope like that opportunity would be? It'd be like, Kieran, I'd like to know, would you like to play the lead of? What would that be?
Right now, in terms of, if you ask me about musicals, I kind of have a hankering to play Sweeney Todd. I think he's a really interesting character. As an actor, I find that
that's
really
fascinating. That's a great performance. Wow.
I remember I saw the original production of it that Hal directed, and I love the music from that show, and Sondheim did an amazing job with that. And then straight plays, I don't know. Eugene O'Neill. I'm a big Eugene O'Neill fan. Anna Christie is one of my favorite plays. Tennessee Williams, big fan. You know, so.
What was the one that I saw with you in?
Sorry?
Do you ever see yourself directing, like being on the other end, the business end?
You know what I really enjoy doing, Bridget? I love coaching. I really enjoy coaching actors. You know, which is, I suppose, is kind of on that path to directing, except I haven't a bloody clue about lights or, you know, that sort of thing, you know. And I have great respect for directors who really understand that. Like, that was one of the brilliant things to think about, how he knew how to create great pictures. And, you know, I'd be kind of lost. I'd feel comfortable working with actors, but in terms of creating pictures on a stage, I don't know what I'd be doing.
Got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
What was the one that I saw you in Boston?
Carousel?
Carousel, that was it, yeah.
Nice, very nice.
Yeah, that was Carousel, that was great.
I did see that.
Yeah, that was really great.
Did you ever get stage fright, Kieran? Did you ever get stage fright? They say actors get it now and then, you know, did it ever?
You know what? I don't think so. I've had my moments where I've forgotten words, and then suddenly the panic sets in, you know? big time.
It's scary. I give you a lot of credit. It's scary. It's, you know.
Well,
it's
you know, you've seen Phantom a number of times. So
I've more than five.
So you know the final lair scene, where Raoul jumps off the travelator, comes to the portcullis, and says, "Let me see her." So I had been doing the show. I must have done the show. I don't know how many hundreds of times when this happened, and the actor Laird McIntosh, who then went on to do Phantom in New York, this is when we were doing it together in Toronto. He came to the portcullis and he's saying, "Let me see her," and I said, "Be my guest, sir." And the line is supposed to be, "Monsieur, I bid you welcome. Did you think that I would harm her? Why should I make her pay for the sins which are yours?" And on yours, I put the noose around his neck, you know. So he comes to the portcullis and he goes, "Let me see her." And I go, "Be my guest, sir." And I start, "Monsieur, I bid you." And when I started to say "bid you," I thought, I have no idea on God's green earth what the next word is. Nothing. Nothing. So I remember asking Colin Wilkinson, as I said earlier, the original Jean Valjean, so I went up to Toronto and replaced him. We were just yapping one night, and I said, "Do you ever go up, which means forget your words?" He said, "Oh, yeah." I said, "What do you do?" He says, "I pretend the microphone's broken." I said, "You do not, you liar." He says, "I do. I just start going, and I thought, oh my God, to have the wherewithal to do that. But I didn't do that. I went, "Monsieur, I bid you." I turned into James Brown. And so, you know, and all I could remember was that I put the noose on his bloody head on the word "yours." So it was like, blah, 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 "yours."
That's funny.
So, you know, things happen. I don't think I've ever had real stage fright, like starting a show until something like that happens. And then you have enough adrenaline to kill a horse.
It's interesting. You know, sometimes I have to get up on stage and I have to speak on something. And I have it memorized, and you get up and it's like, I'm like, how did I just? That's always cute. It's like, how do you handle it? You know, it's difficult.
I think one of the bigger questions I have for Kieran is, because you did such long runs of these shows,
yeah.
do you remember ever getting up saying, like, I really wish I was in bed? Like, were you stricken with the flu or anything that you felt like you could barely stand up?
You know what, Kath? Gosh, I've been very lucky.
Good.
In fact, in the two and a half year run I did in Toronto, I never missed a show. And in fact, I guess about a year or so in, the actor that I mentioned earlier, Laird McIntosh, who was playing Raoul, he was the Phantom understudy. And so the company management came to me and said, listen, you never miss, so he's never on. And we're nervous that if something happens, he'll be so thrown, you know, so would you mind taking a show off and let him go on? And I said, yeah, sure, as long as you still pay me. And So I took the show, so I was off that show, but I came into the theater and I guided him through the whole show. I walked around with a lovely fella, you know, and we got along great. So I did the whole show with him. And,
nice.
You know, it was great fun, you know. Yeah, I was very lucky. Kath, I guess I'm very conscientious about my health. You know, I'm always
That's
working
good.
Out. I eat really clean. When I was in Toronto, I was adamant that I was never going to miss a show. And so I'd go to acupuncture. I'd go to a Chinese traditional doctor. I would get a massage once or twice a week. I'd go to chiropractor twice a week. So I was very conscientious of staying in, you know.
Good for you.
In good health.
I do believe in acupuncture. It's very good. It's good.
Oh, yeah. But Kieran, you've been surrounded by such talented people. I mean, Sue Anderson, who was your accompanist for so long, she passed away last month. And, it's just incredible. I mean, she came to events that I had, you know, with the veterans, and she was at so many events that you were doing. I mean, just the Phantom of events, it's just incredible. She had such a wonderful life, and the stuff that she was involved in, I mean, she was involved in cats and pirates, and can you just say a few words about that? Because she was just such a lovely lady.
It was one of the most devastating losses of my life. Ugh, there he goes. He'll start crying. It was one of the most devastating losses of my life. We were not just music, you know, she was my accompanist for 13 years. And that's a very intimate relationship anyway, because you're so in touch with each other energetically, spiritually, musically, you know, it's a very sort of beautifully cohesive arrangement. But on top of that, she was just such a lovely woman, and we were the best of friends. In fact, when I ran a trip to Ireland a few years ago, she was on it. You know, we were pretty inseparable, and she was so funny, so good-natured, and she was one of the first women to conduct a Broadway show when Joe Papp, who, you know, ran the public theater in New York, had her conduct Pirates of Penzance, and then she conducted Cats and Me and My Girl and Jerry's Girls and played Spamalot, The Lion King. One of my favorite stories, though, about her was she coached a number of other people. Like, she was Rex Harrison's coach for My Fair Lady. And on Broadway. But one of my favorite stories about Sue was she got a phone call about playing piano, or not playing piano, teaching Peter O'Toole, the great Irish actor, to play piano for a movie he was doing with, what's her name? I'm losing my mind. I can't think of her name right now, but she was, Jodie Foster, with Jodie Foster.
Silence of the
Peter O'Toole was a voice teacher, and Jodie Foster was his student. And he was supposed to be playing piano, which he really couldn't. And they called Sue in, and what they wanted her to do was sit in a side room. And I'm getting some feedback here. I'm not sure if somebody's radio was on or if they come back here. Can you hear that, Kathy?
No, I don't hear it at all.
Okay, all right, good. As long as you don't hear it, it's good. Okay. So she was supposed to play this upright piano in this side room, and that's what they were going to record while Peter O'Toole sat in front of this grand piano. And Sue said to the director, "This isn't going to work." And he said, "Why not?" He said, "Well, that's a grand piano, and that's an upright you've got in this little tiny room, and it's going to sound completely wrong. It won't sound like a grand piano." And he said, what do you suggest we do? And she said, "You know what, let me go home, let me think about this, figure out what to do." And so she came back the next day, and they were going to start shooting. And he said, "What are you going to do?" She said, "I'm going to lie underneath the piano with my head in Peter O'Toole's lap and my hands on the piano, and I will play, and he will just follow my hands up and down the piano."
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
Isn't that great?
Wow.
Yeah.
She was terrific. Oh, my God.
Oh, she was just, honestly, I remember the first concert I did with a friend of mine who played with the Chieftains for a number of years named Gabriel Donahue, great guitar player, good piano player, too. We were doing a concert together in somewhere in Pennsylvania, and it was the first time he heard Sue play with us, and he came up to me after the first song. He said, "She's the best accompanist I've ever heard," and she really was. She was just a star, you know. So, and
yeah,
today is her birthday.
Yes, today is her birthday, and really
funny,
lovely.
Kat,
I mean, I just saw her. I know, I asked you, and that's incredible. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, that you had said, you know, how is May the 27th? I said, that's grand, and it's Sue's birthday.
Yeah, it's
she's
really amazing. She is. I know, she still is. I know. It's interesting because I just saw her in December, and we went to see you in New Jersey. My family was there, and you know, my Aunt Sally and I, we just took some time afterwards to kind of chat with her, and I'm so glad we did. You know, I mean, it's just you think of how fast time moves. It's only 5 months ago, and you know, that's why you have to live every day, Kieran. Every day,
absolutely,
as if it's your last, and you have to be very gracious and have gratitude, and you know, and just like having talent. Everyone has their own talent, but it's what you do with that talent. You know, like Sue left such an impression on so many people, and you're leaving an impression on so many people. I mean, everybody has a gift. They just have to decide on how they want to leave that impression, you know? It's really incredible.
Yeah,
time is flying. Do you have anything that you would like to say to the audience before we leave? I know we have like 2 or 3 minutes of the show already.
You know, in March, Sue and I had a couple of concerts with Kaylee, who tours with me, and Heather, violinist, and the last one was, I think it was around March 20th or 21st, and Kaylee and Heather and myself, we took a bow, and Sue took a bow from the piano, and then the three of us left the stage, and Sue stayed. Makes me cry. She stayed, and she said she wanted to thank the audience for being there, and it felt like she was thanking that audience, but it felt like she was thanking all audiences she had played for, you know, over, 50, 60 years. And so it was really beautiful. It was very moving. And they didn't know that it was her saying thank you to all audiences. We did, because we were standing in the wings crying, you know.
And so wow. I just want to say to audiences everywhere, you know, without you, we wouldn't get to do what we get to do. And so thank you.
That's nice.
Yeah, so it's beautiful. And I can't thank you enough for being on the show and for talking all things Broadway. And I look forward to seeing you at your next event. Where, do you have anything coming up?
Well, the Four Phantoms, we were just out in Texas June 21st, I think. We're in Lansdale, Pennsylvania. And then the summer's kind of slow, which is good because we've got to go to Ireland and collect my stepdaughter.
So, oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, I look forward to seeing you back on the stage.
So that's going to take over the summer once. My granddaughter.
Oh, that's right. Your oldest son is having a baby, so you're going to be grandpa.
Easy with that word. I'm still 17.
We'll have to come up with a rocker version of grandpa. We're going to have to come up with a rocker version.
That's great.
Like Zumpa or something.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
well,
excited
congratulations.
About that. That's going to take over the summer, so I'm glad it's kind of slow this year.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, thank you again, Kieran. A very happy birthday to Sue Anderson, our angel now in heaven. And thank you for all the people that called in. It was a great night. Thanks again, Kieran. Yeah. We look forward to seeing you.
Thanks, Bridget. Thanks,
and
Sophie.
People can reach you at your website.
Yeah. Oh, people don't use W's anymore, do they? So is it KieranSheehan.com? Do they? Yeah.
KieranSheehan.com. Okay, great. Yeah. Well, thank you. That's a great night. Thank you so much again.
All right.
Thank you.
Love you, honey. Take care. Bye-bye.
Love you, too. Thank you. Bye-bye.